Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders, joins me on G&D. Always love having Aaron on, one of the smartest football minds in the country. Thank you for joining us. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you for the kind words.
Indeed. So you guys just put out, by the way, your brand new almanac of sorts with all the intel anybody could ever want about this football season. I've been diving into the electronic version. It's incredible. I mean, how long does that take? Do you guys start working on it like next year's now somehow?
Well, in that people know which chapters they're going to write next year, and so they watch those teams extra carefully. But we, you know, I put all the numbers together in February and March and April, and then around late April is when we get started writing, and we just dedicate all of May and June to it, and it comes out mid-July.
It's fantastic. Labor of love, and just makes for more informed football fans everywhere, and I always learn when I am checking it out. So let's start with the Commanders. I want to go around the NFC East with you, Aaron. I want to start with your thoughts, just paint with a broad brush, and then we can kind of double-click on some things. With Washington coming off the offseason they had in the East.
Yeah, I mean, the Washington defense has to be better than it was last year, right? Because last year in particular, first of all, we know there's talent there. We know how good that defensive line was the year before. We know the secondary, you know, guys like William Jackson were good on other teams. But also, they were one of the worst defenses we have ever tracked on third down passes, and there's just no way that that consistently stays into 2022. They're going to be better on defense.
But one of the things that let me jump in on that real quick. One of the things that I found fascinating about the point you guys made about how bad they were on defense, and you historically showed that almost everyone that has been that bad on third and fourth down passing defense gets a lot better, is that normally teams make way more changes than they made. Like almost every time there was a new defensive coordinator, and quite literally every time there was a massive overhaul in personnel, and neither of those things happen here, interestingly.
It's going to be a fun little test of, you know, does personnel changes and coaching changes drive regression, or is it just statistical trends? Because you're right. They did not make a lot of changes on defense compared to other teams that had been in a similar situation in years past. And I understand why. I mean, they were so good on defense the year before. You know, people have asked me about Jack Del Rio and been critical of him. I mean, this is the same guy who coordinated the defense that we had ranked, I think, number three in the league in 2020. So, like, unless he completely lost his ability to understand defense in 1 year, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing stopping him from coordinating a good defense again. And then again, these are like the same players that were third the year before, except, you know, a couple of them got injured, and hopefully they'll have those guys back, although who knows when Chase Young is coming back. And then they added guys like William Jackson, who are supposed to be better than the guys they got rid of.
Other side of the ball, let's talk offense for a moment. Wentz, you guys spent the majority of your team breakdown on this idea of improvement at the quarterback position. What do we think?
Yeah, we're just not Wentz fans, statistically, because of what he did the year before and just how bad he was in 2020. And from a subjective point of view, you know, the things that we've heard, the things that, I mean, everybody has heard, that the Colts officials have said about him in the locker room and his attitude, just doesn't seem really positive to us. And there's a lot of feeling that the fact that he was statistically average last year in some ways is a good coaching job by Frank Reich. And we don't know if Scott Turner can do the same thing. That's not a diss on Scott Turner. It's more of a congratulations to Frank Reich.
Is there a path, and Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders is my guest, to the Commanders winning 10 games, let's say, and making the playoffs as a wild card, and Wentz just being okay? I mean, is that something that you think could happen, or is whatever they're able to accomplish going to go through him?
Oh, no, that's absolutely possible. It goes through him in that he would have to be okay. He would have to be what he was last year, not what he was the year before. But you absolutely have a way in which you can imagine their defense bouncing all the way back to what it was the year before, and their offense being kind of average, because Wentz was kind of average last year. And that is a playoff team, especially when, like the rest of the NFC East, Washington has a particularly easy schedule.
So that, to me, is where I actually am expecting more out of this team than I have in many years, Aaron. It's funny. I've gone on a couple shows, and people will ask, and they must think I'm a homer, because I actually have them way over, I think, what the national expectation is. I think they could go 10-7 and make the playoffs. And I don't think I've picked them to win 10 games in years. Obviously, you get one more game now. But my entire argument is that their schedule is arguably the easiest in the league. I think the division's down. I know the conference is down. Isn't there an argument for that? I mean, you guys drew a really nice comparison to the quarterbacks they played 2 years ago when they were third in DVOA for you versus being sixth to the worst last year when they played much harder quarterbacks. And they're going back to playing a much softer QB schedule this year defensively.
Yeah, but I mean, the same goes for Philadelphia and Dallas, and we're pretty high on Philadelphia and Dallas, so we don't think that the division as a whole is down. I mean, we're more down on the Giants than anybody else, but I guess I just don't see it from Wentz. We just don't see it from Wentz, but it's possible, certainly, that what happened last year was much more Wentz's true ability, and not because Frank Reich coordinated him well and coached him up well, and that he'll be able to do the same thing in Washington. It's possible.
The other thing, if I was arguing on Wentz's behalf, which is not necessarily the camp I'm normally in, but to play a little devil's advocate, you've referenced a couple times 2 years ago that the disaster in Philly, we'll call it. He was better before that too. I mean, wouldn't you say that has been a statistical outlier? Like the year, it was only maybe the year before that he had 4,000 yards when they didn't have a single wideout with over 500. I thought that was some of his best ball.
Yeah, 2020 is a outlier, and we're not expecting him to drop to the level of 2020. That was really, really, really bad. We just don't know if he can keep up the level of last year. But you're right. If you look at his whole career, 4, 5, 6 years that he's been in the league, it does suggest more of an average quarterback than a bad quarterback, statistically. And then you have to account for all those non-statistical, you know, the intangibles, which we don't measure because they're intangibles, but all the reports on his intangibles are terrible.
Yeah. You guys do like their offensive line, it seems like, and have for the last couple years, I believe. They did lose Brandon Scherff at right guard. They've replaced him with Norwell, who was seventh best in run block win right via ESPN last year. I mean, what are the areas on the team that you think could be strengths and could help them?
I mean, the biggest strength is still the defensive line, especially when Chase Young gets healthy, right? I mean, that is 4 first-round picks. That is a very, very strong defensive line. The cornerback group could definitely be a strength. William Jackson, Kendall Fuller, those guys have been good in the past. Benjamin St. Juice has talent. The running backs could be a strength, although you know me, I'm an analytics guy, so my feeling is most running backs are pretty much the same. So, you know, Antonio Gibson is talented just like all the other running backs that are talented. And, of course, I mean, look, Terry McLaurin is great, right? Like, our numbers do not fully show the greatness of Terry McLaurin because he's been hamstrung by the bad quarterbacks, but he is a supremely talented number one receiver. It's the rest of the receivers where there's question marks.
I want to drill down on Aaron Schatz, joining me from Football Outsiders, on your running back take, because you just alluded to it there. But, I mean, go a little bit deeper. So what is your philosophy on running backs in general then?
Yeah, and this is, I mean, generally the philosophy of most folks in analytics. It's that running backs are mostly the same. The reason why running backs are mostly the same is not that they're bad. It's that they're good. Right? Like, you can grab running backs in late rounds and even off the scrap heap and get good performance out of them. And there are a couple who are special in certain ways, whether it's a pass catcher, like Austin Eckler and Christian McCaffrey, or the way that they run, like Jonathan Taylor or Nick Chubb or Derrick Henry, although who knows if Henry is healthy enough to run that way anymore. But for the most part, running backs are fairly interchangeable. None of them are terrible, and most of them are not particularly great. They're just, they're all kind of talented, and Washington's are kind of talented too.
Is there, though, a way to determine, like, who is worth paying and who isn't? Because, as an example, Gibson last year, I thought, took a step backwards, put more balls on the carpet, had a lot more carries, and broke, I think, one more tackle than a year before, which tells you about his effectiveness. I wouldn't give him another contract as of right now. There are very few running backs I would. But to say that no one should ever do that, you mentioned Jonathan Taylor or Nick Chubb or a Dalvin Cook or somebody like that. Like, how do you differentiate between guys who are special and everybody else then?
I mean, you look at things like broken tackles. You look at things like yards after the catch and yards after contact. The NFL has a great model they call rushing yardage over expectation, that actually measures what the rushing yardage is expected to be based on where the blockers and defenders are at the moment of the handoff. And that's a really good way to measure running backs. But for the most part, the other thing is, even the guys who are special tend to not be special once you hand them a second contract, because they get older and they get broken down. It's a problem for running backs that, you know, they don't make as much money on their first contract, but that's where all of their value is.
Yeah, it's a great point. Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders, and specific to Gibson, just for the record, some of those areas you talked about analytically are where you grade running backs. They haven't been favorable to him over the last couple of seasons. All right, let's go around the division then. You said you are really high on Philly and Dallas. Who are you higher on? Who wins the East?
I like Philadelphia. I'm not going to say I'm the world's greatest Jalen Hurts believer, but I think he was an average passing quarterback last year and, of course, a fantastic runner. And they've added a ton of talent in the offseason. Haason Reddick and James Bradbury and A.J. Brown, and getting Brandon Graham back from injury. And of all the teams in the division, all of whom have easy schedules, by our projections, they have the easiest schedule. We also like Dallas. Dallas was number one in the regular season in our ratings last year. And a lot of their problem last year was penalties, which don't correlate very strongly from year to year. There's a very good chance that Dallas is not going to, like, lead the league in penalties this year, that they're going to be more average. So they lost some talent, so we don't see them as the top team certainly this year. And there's questions at the wide receiver position, and the defense is not going to be as good. They're not going to get as many takeaways, just because defenses just don't get that many takeaways in two straight years. But we do still like Dallas to be a strong playoff team.
So on the Eagles, before we go to Dallas, I have, from afar, kind of compared them to Washington a year before that, where the Commanders won what I consider to be kind of a fake division title. But there was a year there where everything went their way. They played the 49ers at neutral site because of the air in San Francisco, and they played Nick Mullins at quarterback, and Joe Burrow got hurt, so they beat up on Ryan Finley, and they played two Cowboys games, and one was against Andy Dalton, and one was against Ben DiNucci. And when you go back through the Eagles last year, it was a lot of stuff like that. Like, it was a really fortuitous kind of magical carpet ride for them. How do you bake that type of stuff in? Because I asked that saying, last season, a lot of people were super high on Washington based on the year before, and those of us that saw it and saw who they were beating and playing and who they were getting fat on were kind of dubious and skeptical and ended up being right. So how do you guys bake those kind of lucky factors in?
Well, we do adjust for things like that. We try to adjust in our projections. I mean, a good example is Miami. Miami's defense last year, by far their best game was when New Orleans had to start Ian Book and had a bunch of people on the COVID list. And so when we were projecting this year for the Dolphins, we took that out.
Wow. Just said, we're not even going to give you the Ian Book game.
We're just not giving you the Ian Book game. And because it was such an outlier. And so we look for outliers like that. And there really weren't any, like, extreme outliers like that for Philadelphia. But, yeah, they did have it easy at times. There's no question about it. But we really like the talent that they added this offseason. They really added a lot of good parts.
And you said the Cowboys were number one in your ratings. For people that aren't like me scouring Football Outsiders, I'm guessing you're saying they were your number one team in DVOA, yes?
Yeah, they were number one in our DVOA ratings during the regular season last year. And also, people really overstate that playoff loss. Yes, they lost in the playoffs. That's a bad thing. But they lost to another very good team, and they only lost by one score. It's not like they went and got blown out in the playoffs. And there are plenty of teams throughout NFL history that have had losses in the playoffs that go on to win it all the next year. So that one loss in the playoffs does not really affect their chances for this year. It's things like losing Amari Cooper and not knowing when Michael Gallup's going to come back and losing parts of their offensive line, and that's more what affects them for this year.
And you created DVOA as just kind of an equalizer to try to put together a power rankings of sort and to figure out who is authentically better than who. I mean, how would you explain it for people listening on the radio in an elevator pitch style?
Sure. We measure the success of every play based on the down and distance and then compare it to a league average baseline adjusted for situation and opponent.
You've said that before, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got it down to a science now.
People are going to have to probably rewind and go, okay, I get, yep, now that part, okay. So it's legit, and I love it because it's just a good thing that I reference from time to time, specifically on you know, offense or defense, really, for units on various sides of the ball. But when it comes to the division, you've got Philly, then Dallas, then Washington, then New York. Is Washington close with the other two? Or are they closer to the Giants? Like, how do you see the pecking order working out?
I think they end up a little bit closer to the Giants, but they're basically halfway between Philly and Dallas in the good and the Giants in the bad.
Wow. Okay. Good information. Well, Aaron, I really appreciate it. The new almanac looks great, and I'm excited people can get their hands on it and get it virtually now. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Check out Amazon for Football Outsiders Almanac 2022 or go to footballoutsiders.com/subscribe to learn more.
Love that. Appreciate you, buddy.
All right. Thanks, dude.
Be well. I like football nerdery. That's what I like. And for that reason, Aaron Schatz is my guy. Give me all the numbers. Give me the information. You want to give me the analysis by way of number? I'm going to take it. I got numbers on Patrick Corbin. They're really bad. Wait till you hear his percentile rankings in baseball. We're going to do this next. Here is going to be my question for you. What should the Nats do? Are they really just going to keep having him pitch as a starter every fifth day between now and the end of the year? They got some options here. Davey was starting to wonder aloud, is it time to actually navigate away from the plan and try something else? In his last three starts twice, he has not gotten three outs. He has been removed in the first inning of a game. We have reached a point of no return with Patrick Corbin. Nats fans, what should they do? That is my question. You can call me now at 800-636-1067. You can tweet me at Grant H. Paulson. You are listening to The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thank you, Heisty. Welcome back. Grant and Danny on the Fan. No Danny today. In case you're curious, I'm wearing a black t-shirt. It's got white letters and images. It's black and white all together, but it says USA. It's like a golf shirt. I bought it before I did a golf event once because I wanted to look like a golfer. Problem with that is eventually you got to swing that club. You know what I mean? It's like you walk in, you got your golf shirt and your golf hat on, and everyone's like, oh, I didn't know Grant golfed. Cool, man. He's in our foursome. But eventually, you got to swing that club. That's how they separate the pretenders from the people who actually golf. So, yeah, I bought this once. I wear it every now and then. Then I got some khaki shorts, and I got my Kizik shoes on. Easy to slip in and out of, which I like. Let's talk Patrick Corbin, shall we? Oh, my goodness, has this gotten out of hand. I mean, it's been bad for a while. Like, it's been really bad. But we have now reached rock bottom. We have reached the level, and I'm not making light of this or joking, where I legitimately now feel bad for Patrick Corbin. That's how bad it is. I'm not even angry. I'm not upset. I'm not frustrated. It's not even about me or the Nats anymore because none of their games matter, frankly. I actually feel for Patrick Corbin, and I understand that he makes $140 million, and a lot of you are going to say, I shouldn't, and that's fine. You know how lonely it must be to be out on that mound every 5 days throwing batting practice. So publicly humiliated every 5 days to do your job. If you have a job that is public, most people don't. I do. I have a radio show, right? Imagine if I had the yips. And every time I got on the air, the most mortifying, embarrassing, awful show that I'd ever done happened again. Do you know how much I would dread 2 o'clock every day? Do you know how much I would cringe that on-air light turning on? Just knowing I was about to get embarrassed again in front of tens of thousands. You know what? Heck, let's just say it. Millions and millions in the D.C. area. Patrick Corbin, man. For 4 days, he wakes up and goes, 3 more days till I got to give up 9. I mean, what is his life like? I just can't stop thinking about it. Maybe I'm different. I have anxiety. I don't make light of this, okay? I was diagnosed with anxiety, and I am on anxiety medications. I fixate on things, and I feel bad conscientiously about things sometimes that you don't need to. But, you know, let me give you an example of like something I could fixate on. I don't know if like I say something to someone, and then I after the fact perceive it like, oh, maybe they took that as a slight. And then for the rest of the night, I'll have that feeling in the pit of my stomach like I did something wrong, wondering if maybe they took it as a slight. Just something silly like that, right? But imagine if I had to pitch every 5 days in front of tens of thousands of people in a ballpark with another tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands watching on TV. Mortifying. And you know you've lost it. You don't have it anymore. So I feel for the guy. But I digress. I mean, he gets paid well. It's his job. And he goes home. And then he's got things he cares about. He gets to go, I don't know what he likes to do, hunt. Is it hunting season? He has a putt-putt golf course in his backyard. So that's cool. He's got a great house, I'm sure. He's married. He's got children. So he's got a life outside of baseball. It's just his job. I'll rationalize it that way so I don't feel too bad for the guy. But I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like this. And this is really a baseball-only problem for me. In football, if you're terrible, there are 10 other players out there that sometimes can help mask that deficiency. Like, if you're a corner and you just get burnt like toast over and over again, eventually you go to the bench. The Nats just keep sending this guy out there over and over and over again for 3 straight years to get rocked. It's unlike anything I've seen. And the fall off, the fall from grace is incredible. People forget, in 2019, Patrick Corbin was the man. He was one of the best lefties in the National League. He pitched 200 innings. He struck out 238 batters, about 11 per 9 for the second straight year. He finished 11th in Cy Young balloting, a year after being 5th in Cy Young balloting in Arizona. He got paid $140 million. He was an all-star twice over. Then he was a World Series hero. And to this second, I would tell you that I would go back and I would hit the button again, 6-140 for Corbin. Because without him, you don't win the 19 World Series. And that flag will fly forever, and I will take that World Series gladly for whatever's happened since with him. But he led the league in hits allowed in 2020. He led the league in losses, 16, and earned runs and home runs allowed last year. And this year, he is on pace for well over 20 losses. Nobody loses 20 losses in baseball anymore. Nobody. Hadn't happened in years. He's leading the league in hits. He's leading the league in earned runs. This is year three of an ongoing fiasco of sorts. But if you look at the numbers now, here's his percentiles. I love the percentile rankings. You'll hear me reference them from time to time. The reason I do percentile rankings is it just tells you where guys are among their peers. I think the best way to analyze performance is not always to give numbers because the sport changes. As an example, this year, it's harder to hit than it used to be. But if you give a percentile ranking of where someone ranks among players in the sport this year, you know, it kind of evens the playing field, right? Patrick Corbin's percentile ranking graph on Baseball Savant is the worst I've ever seen. And I'm not trying to belittle him. I mean, he's a good person. I've enjoyed interviewing him. I will talk to him again, I'm sure, someday, and I look forward to that. But I'm just telling you, I've never quite seen anything like this. So his average exit velocity, meaning how hard opponents hit the ball off their bat against Patrick Corbin, is in the sixth percentile in baseball. Means 94% of pitchers do a better job with lower exit velocities off the bat. His hard hit percentage is in the 8th percentile. 92% do better. His expected ERA and expected weighted on base are in the 1st percentile. That means you are rock bottom 1st percentile, 99 out of every 100 players, based on all of the numbers, are expected to have a better earned run average and weighted on base than you. His expected batting average, this is how hard the ball is hit, at what launch angles, based on where fielders normally play, his expected batting average is in the 1st percentile. Imagine going to the doctor and them saying, yeah, your baby's head is in the 1st percentile. You want to be close to the 50th, ideally, right? But in this case, for Corbin, you want to be at 100 of all of this stuff. You want to be first in your class. He is 1st percentile. Expected slugging, 2nd percentile. Expect a barrel percentage. How often you're getting hit on the barrel by opponents. 10th percentile. Fastball velocity, 33rd. Chase rate, 42nd. I mean, we haven't found one category where he's league average. Strikeout percentage. He gets a lot of swings and misses. 26th. Whiff percentage, 25th. Fastball spin rate, 17th percentile. And those are just the advanced numbers, which are more friendly to him than the reality numbers. Because he's got an ERA over 7, his fielding independent pitching is 4.96, 2 runs better than that, meaning what he should have as an ERA, sub 5. And so the Nats will say, I'm sure, they have in the past, to me and others, oh, he hasn't been as bad as his numbers. I mean, Davey says this regularly. In fact, I saw Davey at the All-Star game, and he said, and it's not wrong. Like, yes, that's true. His ERA should probably be closer to 5 than it is 7. But you can say, well, he's not as bad as his numbers, when his ERA is 5 and he should have a 3.5. If you're telling me, yeah, he shouldn't have a 7, he should have a 5.2. What are we doing here, Harry? You can't have a 5.2. What? Every 5 days, man, they just keep running him out there to get his teeth kicked in. And I can't stop watching. 2 of the last 3 starts, he hasn't gotten out of the first inning. The value in Corbin, the reason this worked at one point in time was he would eat innings. No matter what happened, he was going to go deep into starts. Yeah? He'll give you 5, 6, 7 innings on a good night, and he'll save the bullpen. But he has taxed the bullpen worse than anyone else over the last 3 trips through the rotation. He's now, I think, 5 or 6 starts stretch here where he's averaged sub-5 innings, basically. He's killing your bullpen. That's how you get arms hurt as the year goes along. There was a piece written, I think it was Starting 9 had this, where they looked up over the last 25 years. So you're talking about 1997, I was 9 years old. This is how far back they went. Looking for pitchers with 110 innings pitched who had an ERA over 7, which is what Corbin has right now. There are two guys who have ever had that. Colby Lewis in 2003, I think he pitched for Cleveland at that time, had a 7.3 ERA, worse than Corbin's. And Scott Ellerton in 2001, I would guess the Rangers, but I don't remember, had a 7.06, which is a little bit worse, a little bit better than Corbin's, rather. Corbin's one of three guys in 25 years, 110 innings into a year, with an ERA over 7. And the reason this never happens is not that guys aren't this bad or that guys don't struggle like he has, but you just never get to keep pitching. You get DFA'd, which they can't do because of the contract. You get sent to the minors, or you just get moved to the bullpen or something. No one just lets you just keep doing what he's doing all year as poorly as he's doing it. There's a number. I don't want to overly nerd this up. I know we've done a lot of nerd stuff here this hour. But there's a number called WAR, wins above replacement, which just is a value. So zero is a replacement level player. Anything minus is a player worse than average. Anything plus is a player better than average. And Ellerton and Lewis both had a minus 1.3 in those years where their ERAs were over 7, meaning, you know, they were worth basically one loss as a player each. Patrick Corbin is minus 2.5. He's almost twice in B-WAR as bad a wins above replacement as those two guys. In 01 and 03, the only other players of the last 25 years who have had the ERA over 7. It's hard to watch. I mean, does anyone else agree? I'm going to take calls on this next. I want to hear from you guys. Am I crazy to say I feel bad for him? I know everyone says, oh, he makes money. Who cares? But you know this is just eating at him. And if he had a job where he went and, you know, if he was the worst grocery scanner ever, and every day he dropped eggs and milk and it was just so embarrassing and he had this phobia where he had to go back in and drop the milk and the eggs again, well, that would be awful. But no one would see it. It would happen in anonymity. We're watching this on television. I mean, these everyone's tweeting about it. Heavy lies the crown. I get it. You get $140 million. It makes it all worth it. But what should they do is really my, I guess, my real question here. Options are, I'll answer this next. You can either put them on the IL, kind of a air quotes here, phantom IL stint. You can put them in the bullpen for now. I guess you could DFA him and end this and just eat the rest of his $140 million contract. I don't think they're going to do that. Or maybe option four is keep starting him every 5 days and act like nothing's happening. Look somewhere else because there's enough bad in the organization that you don't really have to worry about a starter who's struggling. But let's get to the calls on this next. 800-636-1067. Grant and Danny without Danny. On The Fan, what would you do with Patrick Corbin?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
One ball, two strikes, the count, and Corbin sets, kicks, and fires. Swing and a fly ball, deep to left, down the line, going, gone, goodbye. Hanging breaking ball, and Matt Beerling has hit a three-run homer. It's his fourth of the year. It gives him 17 runs batted in. And the Phillies have the crooked number on the board here at the bottom of the first inning. A three-run home run for Beerling. It's now the Phillies 4 and the Nationals nothing.
It would get worse. 7 earnings charged at Corbin, who didn't get 3 outs, removed from the game in the first. Second time in 3 starts this weekend. So what do you do? That's the question. 800-636-1067. You can tweet me at Grant H. Paulson. We got the Beltway Blitz coming up in 15 minutes. Benjamin Brown of PFF on the NFL. Craig Heist on the Nats. I'll ask him about Corbin. And Scott Abraham on the Commanders. I am putting him on the injured list. You're supposed to have an actual injury. I'll call it a phantom IL, whatever. Everybody who has pitched 110 innings in the big leagues, and it's very few guys because he's made the most starts in the big leagues this season. But at this point of the year, nobody's 100% healthy. So physically, something doesn't feel right. Put him on the IL for that. If it's just a mental break and it's mental health, put him on whatever list you need to for that. But I am just I'm resetting him. I'm just giving him a little bit of time where he doesn't have to pitch and get worn out and hear people like me talking about it. That would be my plan for now. Week or two reset. Bring him back after that. If you want to give him another start, that's fine. I would put him in the bullpen after that. I would probably have an opener, throw an inning or two in front of him, like an Erasmo Ramirez type. And then I would just have him pitch 3 or 4 innings and try to get you through the 6th or something. That would be my plan for now. Because they're not moving on. They're not eating the money at this juncture. But I want to know what you guys would do. I think there are 4 options. Do what the Nats have done, which is just keep pitching him as a starter every 5 days. Do what I would do, which is put him on the IL. Figure out a reason to get him to the injured list. Clearly something isn't 100%. He's got to be, if nothing else, fatigued at this point. Third thing you could do would be to just move him straight to the bullpen. He's made his last start of the season. And then the last thing would be to release him, I suppose. Let's go to Josh in Springfield on Grant and Danny. No Danny today. What's up, Josh?
What's up, Grant? So I've gone back and forth thinking about this, and I'm really just in the camp of keep throwing him out there. I mean, he's paid to do a job. He does it poorly. He's awful at it. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people that get paid money to be terrible at their jobs. I mean, I don't want to name the network, but there's a guy named Rick Knight, always gives the worst takes I've ever heard in sports ever, and he gets paid to be on TV. He continues to do it. I mean, if he's embarrassed, if he's ashamed, if he's, you know, that's the problem for him. That's not anybody else's problem.
That's true. But you wouldn't be essentially ending his misery for him. It would be a team decision. I mean, in other words, they're not going to shut him down because this is not fun for him. They would be moving him to the bullpen or putting him on the IL because there's actual baseball reasons. What he's doing to the bullpen right now is crippling your chances of having an effective bullpen because you are having no chance at winning baseball games. Now, I can sit here and tell you winning baseball games clearly isn't the priority or not something they should care about, but they are trying to at least put out the front-facing idea that they are trying to win games. And at some point, pitching him no longer sends that message to other guys in the clubhouse. So it wouldn't be that they're just saying, oh, you can't start anymore because they feel bad for the guy. That's just me saying, I'm leveling with you guys and saying, I know this is weird to say about a guy who makes $140 million to pitch, but I do feel for him because I think he probably for 4 days just dreads going to the ballpark knowing that he doesn't have it anymore. It reminds me almost of like Henry Rowan Gardner in the movie Rookie of the Year after he lost his powers. Remember, he slips on a baseball and he can throw 100. Then he slips on the baseball again and now he can't throw 100. And he's just got so much fear that he's going to get called into the game. And maybe Patrick Corbin doesn't feel this way, but it's 3 seasons of this. I would imagine he kind of knows most of his starts are not going to end well. Danny, DC, what's up? Danny, are you there?
Yeah. How you doing, man? A lot of this has to do with motivation. You know, that's a big factor. Let's not talk about the fact that this guy has nothing to play for anymore. John Wall, Albert Haynesworth, I can go down the list. I mean, motivation, he's got the money. What is it to play for anymore?
Well, pride and professionalism, honoring a contract. I mean, you know, if I get paid, it doesn't change much about how I operate. I was kind of raised in a way where, you know, you take what you do seriously. Maybe it's just that I've been in locker rooms or been covering sports for a long time, but the number of guys who get paid and stop working at it is way smaller than you'd think. These guys are driven. They're obsessed with these games. You don't get to the professional high ranks like Corbin did as a multi-time All-Star otherwise. I don't think he stopped working. He's a two-pitch guy, fastball slider, who has to be ahead in counts, and for whatever reason, after being the best slider artist in the game in 19, you know, he doesn't get people to chase and bite like he once did. I'd love to be able to tell you what's changed. I can't. Right? Nobody knows. He doesn't know. I don't think it's a lack of effort. I guess that's possible. I'm not around him every day, but I would have a hard time believing that. I mean, by that standard, he got paid the offseason going into 19. Why would he have worked his butt off going into 19 when he was arguably the best lefty starter in the sport that year and struck out 240 batters in 200 innings and pitched him to a World Series win? Chris is in Maryland. Hey, Chris.
Hey, I'm going to thank you for taking my call. Do you say his numbers, his spin rate, and his velocity are similar to when they were when?
Well, his velocity actually hasn't fallen off compared to now a couple years ago. It did for a little while, like around 19.
He checked on 19? Is that what you compared it to?
He's back up now, yep.
Oh, and now how about his spin rate? So his velocity is the same as 19. What about his spin rate?
I can look it up for you. I don't have that in front of me.
I'm thinking Spider Tack right there. But let's Spider Tack, I don't know, was out in 20 when he sucked. But that was
Spider Tack's been around for years and years and years.
Look, the man, he was booed earlier this season. I don't know if you recall. Maybe in May, one
he's
game.
He's been booed a lot.
He got booed. And I said, no,
he's been bad
enough.
For 3 years.
They need to save him from himself. And I'm starting, and they should. But I'm going to go to him first. He deserves his dignity. He's got a place of honor in our club. And you're going to go to him first. And we're going to, just like you gave the options. What do you want to do, Patrick? But I tell you what, you got to give us some options here because we've got 6 weeks left, and we're going to take a break on what we're doing here every 5 days. So you tell us what you want us to do for maybe a couple weeks, and maybe we'll get you back on the as a starter the last couple of weeks.
I like that idea. I haven't thought about that. You kind of go to him. Again, he's one of the last remaining guys of the World Series team, and he's integral in you winning a World Series. And you go, hey, what are we going to do here? Help us put together a plan, an exit strategy of sorts. So just to give you your answer, in 2018, his spin rate was in the 50th percentile in baseball, which is his last year with the Diamondbacks before he got paid. This year, he's the 17th percentile. Now, it's more important to have spin rate now, so I suppose that doesn't necessarily mean anything. He was 24th per spin rate percentile last year. In 2020, he was 18th. In 2019, his first year in Washington, he was 42nd. So compared to his peers, his spin rate has fallen off the last couple of years. Fastball velocity has never been much different. He was 33rd percentile when he got here. He's 33rd percentile now. Mike's in Stafford. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
So,
I hate it, but your phone broke up on you.
With
oh, there you go. You're back. Start again. Sorry, you broke up.
Oh, I was living in Arizona. We had the same exact conversation that we're having now about him. It was Shelby Miller and Patrick Corbin. They're the greatest, you know, tandem pitchers. They're going to take Arizona back to the World Series. All this trash. Buy a Mayflower moving truck, back it up to his door, and move him out. He did the same thing in Arizona.
Well, not completely. I mean, he did have a bad year in Arizona at one point. But he got paid $140 million after his final 2 years in Arizona, where he was one of the better lefties in the National League. So, like, you guys might not like him because he left. His final year in Arizona, he was a top five voted pitcher in the Cy Young Award. Right now, he's one of the five worst pitchers through 110 innings ever. I'm not sure that the comparison's great. I got to be honest. I'm going to say that what he's doing here this year is different than what he did in Arizona when the Nats and the Yankees fought over him in free agency. Pete's in Leesburg. Hey, Pete.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got an idea, and it's kind of a touchy subject, but I think some of his struggles might go back to when the pitcher for the Angels passed away in 2019, Tyler Skaggs. That was a good buddy of his, and I think it might be affecting where Corbin's head might be at in the game right now.
Huh. I mean, that's tragic to even think about. Yeah, it was a good friend of his. Obviously, he wore his number in his first start after that we lost him, and he had died. I don't know. Is that something that's on your mind when you're on the mound now, years later? I can't imagine, but I'm not sure. I mean, what I know is this. To answer the question about fastball velocity, his 92.5 miles per hour on his fastball this year, which is identical to last year, is harder than he threw in his first two seasons in Washington. It's harder than he threw in his last 2 years in Arizona. In fact, his two hardest fastball velocities, 92.5, were the last 2 years. So he's technically throwing harder now than he used to in terms of his heater. The pitch isn't necessarily more effective, obviously. Doesn't spin more than it used to. But in terms of velo, it's not like that's a problem where he's lost velocity. It has not gone well. And they got to figure something out. I hope he gets a couple weeks off here and that. You know, frankly, he should be in the bullpen the rest of this season and let him face lineups one time and see if he can get 2-3 innings of some effectiveness out of him. Call up Cade Cavalli and give him a spot in the rotation. Because it's also ridiculous that he's still in AAA. All right, let's get your Beltway Blitz next. NFL, Commanders, and the Nats after they got swept by the Phillies all coming up. Grant and Danny on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.